This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Supercomputing welcomes Flash Gordon.
And a Q4 slump warning for HPC.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for December 9th, 2011. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined once again by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, we had some interesting news this week, getting down to the end of the year, but there's still some activity going on in the supercomputing community.
Yeah, you got a couple of interesting installations going on out there, including a new one in San Diego with a lot of flash.
Yeah, being in San Diego, I got to actually go to the launch. It's everybody's heard of this. It's Gordon at the San Diego Supercomputing Center. They've been talking about this for a couple of years now, and they finally launched it officially at a ceremony out at the center here in La Jolla.
Now, it's called Gordon, and it's got a lot of flash, right?
It's, so it's got
is
a lot
that
of
intentional
flash.
Or what?
Is that
flash
intentional?
Gordon?
Flash Gordon, yeah. It's got 300 terabytes of flash. I think it's the biggest flash system in the world. There's probably clusters out there that might have more that, you know, are put together by somebody like Facebook or Amazon, but this is a single system, 300 terabytes of flash, and a supercomputer that's about 280 teraflops, so a decent-sized supercomputer stuck onto this as well. But the big thing is the flash, because mm-hmm. it's built for big data, data-intensive applications, and that was the whole intent of this supercomputer, and that's what they convinced NSF to build. That's what they wanted to build, and sure enough, it launched this week. Actually, it's not going to be up for production until January in a couple weeks, but they're going through acceptance tests right now.
We'll get to the big data aspects in a second and why the flash and what kind of applications, but give us the rest of the configuration. This is an Intel Xeon system, right?
Right. It's Intel Xeon, the new Sandy Bridge Xeons, which actually are not generally available right now, but some of the supercomputers got early access to the early...
San Diego Supercomputer Center doesn't worry about generally available. They can get it.
They can get anything, I guess. And it's built by Apro, so it's an Apro. It's basically an Apro cluster with, like I said, with the new...
They all have iPhone 7s down there.
Right. Exactly. What else? There's 4 petabytes of disk on this thing, 64 gigabytes of memory. So decent sized memory on the whole system. And, like I said, it's 280 teraflops. I think it got in there in time for the last Limpac run. So I think it made like number 48th on the top 500 list. So it is a decent sized, system flop wise. But again, that is not the real intent of this. It's all about the data intensive applications.
Right. So anytime you get into that much flash, it's not about the flops. It's about the IOPS. And that's exactly what you put flash in for. And presumably they're ready to do a lot of big data analytics here.
Right. Like I think some of the applications that drove them, especially are genomics. They had people that were actually advising them on what kind of, IOPS and capability they would need for some of the genomics applications that they're looking at. And there's other things. There's data mining of all sorts. There's financial risk management. They could actually try and attract different types of research from the NSF community, from the XSEED community, to sign on to this and start doing sort of their push-the-envelope big data applications on this machine
right
now that it's up.
Now, there are different aspects to big data that need to be appreciated. The different types of big data applications stress different parts of a system. They have different bottlenecks. They require different technologies. Some of these big data applications have to do with very large files. This configuration is more to do with having large numbers of small files. You can get into, you know, tens, hundreds, millions of, or billions of small files, and then the IOPS start to become critical.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think the idea here is that you're going to put the data set or as much of the data set as possible on this 300 terabytes of flash. So basically you put your file there and then just ingest it, and it's, you know, on the nearly as fast, not quite as fast as RAM memory, but you know, on more of that order. And there's a lot of data you can put in. 300 terabytes, I think they mentioned, you can put 100,000 human genomes into that flash. And there's not even 100,000 genomes in the world right now that have been sequenced. So
right.
They've definitely got a lot. And the IOPS are like at 36 million, which is quite fast aggregate. So, yeah, this is something that, you know, the supercomputing world has not seen to date. And there are going to be a lot of interesting applications that are going to try and stress this system.
Well, Intersect 360 Research contributed an article to your sister publication, Datanami, on the big data opportunity for HPC vendors, where we look at this hierarchy of applications, looking at research analytics, enterprise analytics, real-time analytics, the different techniques or applications that you see in this space, not only a MapReduce or Hadoop type of application, but things in complex event processing or data mining or visualization. All of these present various opportunities for HPC technologies to shine. This really highlights a research analytics area with a high number of IOPS going into these genomics applications. It's going to be interesting to see the tie between this and some of the plays on the enterprise side.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they actually attracted a few non-technical, what we'd say non-scientific applications into this system. They, you know, they talked about the social media applications. There's a lot of things that this system could be used for, even outside of scientific computing. And we might see over the next few years some of those applications actually work their way onto this just for researchers who are pushing that envelope.
Well, that's exactly right. When you get into the analytics behind social media, the analytics behind things like online games, the analytics behind, you know, things like Twitter, or some of the, finance, risk management types of things where you've got, so many scenarios that you're looking at. In all of these cases, it's not the individual size of any one large file that drags you down. That, you know, like you get in oil and gas or you have these 140 terabyte files. You know, here it's that you're dealing with so many files that you're trying to look at and do comparisons and analytics on. That's where those IOPS become so important.
Right, and the random nature, in a lot of cases unstructured data, and it's random access. So right, the flash memory and the IOPS become quite important, and something that really can't be accomplished with a disk system unless it's tremendously over provisioned.
Right. Now, the other important thing I want to point out with big data, though, and this is although this is a supercomputer, that the big in big data is a relative thing, kind of like the high in high performance computing. You don't need an absolute number of IOPS or an absolute number of gigabytes in order to be considered big data. Big in this case is relative to what you've dealt with before, what your infrastructure is equipped to handle. And it's like high in high performance computing. You can have an entry-level high-performance computing cluster, just like you can have small businesses dealing with big data problems that are bigger than anything they've had to deal with before.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's the analytics side that I think, you know, we want to focus on here. It's in some cases, it's fast data rather than big data. It's getting the data moving around quickly inside the computer, not necessarily petabytes of it, but just, you know, one human genome, which is a fair size itself, just been able to right. to access it and process it very quickly.
Sometimes it's the bigness of it. Sometimes it's the speed of it. Sometimes it's the numbers of it. Sometimes it's the concurrent access aspect and the number of users sharing. There are many different dimensions, and that's the point of our big data opportunity for HPC study that's on our website right now.
So, Addison, we're getting close to the end of the year. I know you guys made some pretty bullish forecasts for 2011, I think something like close to 10% growth over last year. So we're almost there. We've got a couple weeks to go. Obviously, all the data can't be collected that quickly. But
yep.
How are those numbers holding up?
Well, you know, and we've got some big growth that we're looking forward to. We were talking about big data, which I think is a big growth opportunity. But we wanted to talk about this because we're getting concerned that we might fall short of the growth numbers that we'd forecast for 2011 for two reasons. One is the Eurozone crisis, which was not part of our forecast, could be slowing things down in EMEA specifically. And the other that's going to have a near-term effect, but it's having it in Q4. more is the flooding in Thailand that's slowing down deliveries of disk, or it's caused a worldwide shortage in disk. That could drop a lot of the storage revenue out of Q4 and into the middle of next year.
Huh. Yeah, I've heard about the flooding in Thailand. I didn't realize there were that many disks. Components coming out of that area, though.
Well, what's happened is I think you're seeing a short-term, not only shortness in capacity for disks worldwide, which is going to affect a lot of deliveries, but in the near term, the prices have also gotten very high as people are trying to secure what inventory that there is. So it's one of these scenarios where the people who are willing to spend the most have the best chance to go grab what inventory there is. But we were initially looking at a 9.4% growth for the market as a whole from 2010 to 2011. That's just part of a short-term high going out to a long-term 7% compound annual growth. I'm not so worried about the long-term growth, but I am worried that things could slow down in certain regions, drop from 2011 to 2012, especially with the storage, which was our forecast highest growth sector at 12%.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting to see the impact of sort of these macroeconomic and crisis event, a physical crisis like happened in Thailand. I guess you guys really can't, cook those into your forecast. I mean, something like the Eurozone, though, I mean, people knew that was kind of coming.
Yeah, and we were keeping an eye on that a year ago, but we were primarily concerned with what we knew were significant limitations in the U.S. government fiscal area a year ago. And now what we're seeing is that the U.S. is still not sped up yet on government spending, and Europe could slow down significantly. So when we start looking at some of the geographic splits, which for HPC, all products and services worldwide now, North America is still a little more than half. EMEA has been just under 30%. Asia Pacific's 15%. We could, as we redo the forecast next year, have to put more of an accelerator on Asia Pacific as a share of the market, because China is really the one region that's remained strong.
Right. I mean, there's been talk of possibly a double-dip recession over the last 6 months, but you don't hear so much of that in Asia, at least outside of Japan. But right, I mean, some of these things that I guess you really have no control over and forecasting, they, all of a sudden, they come to pass, and then the forecasts are, start to slide off.
Well, my partner, our chief research officer, Chris Willard, said it great to me once. He said the trouble with forecasting is that your forecast always has to be, in some sense, bound by what's realistic, whereas reality doesn't have any kind of restrictions.
Exactly.
And, you don't forecast major European countries going bankrupt as part of your forecast. And then when you do get a slowdown like that, you're going to have to adjust. Now, I don't think it's going to get to the point where we're seeing 2011 is a dip year from 2010, but we might fall short of that growth number that we originally forecasted. If we do, most of the growth gets recaptured in 2012, 2013. I don't think we see a significant change to the long-term five-year growth rate.
Right, assuming there's no other crisis that happens in 2012, but...
We can hope. It wouldn't be bad if the economy started doing all of us a few more favors.
Yeah, it wouldn't. Well, before we leave the show, we should probably mention we're going to be on the road next year.
You're going to be further on the road than I am. You're going to be way on the road. I think our next podcast, you're going to be in China.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have good internet. We'll be able to do that from China. I'm going to be at the NVIDIA GTC conference, the GPU technology conference in Asia, in Beijing. It's their first GTC conference. They're starting to do these regionally now. They've had them in Singapore, Taiwan, Israel, and Japan. And this is the first one in China. I think they expect a nice crowd there. It's sort of a regional conference now. They're going to bring in people from really all over the world. And I think they expect a nice turnout. That should be exciting. There's going to be a lot of interesting presentations and technology being presented there.
Well, I hope you enjoy that. I won't be able to attend that myself. I will be in Urbana, Illinois for the HPC 360 conference, which is a lot like China in many ways.
Is it, though?
I'm sure I'll discover them while I'm there. Actually, I've been to this conference previously. I really enjoy this conference. It does have a good look at some of the issues that there are in manufacturing, digital manufacturing adoption for HPC. It's got a good Midwest presence, and right. I'll be there giving a presentation this week.
Yeah, I was looking forward to see what happens there. We've covered that in the past, and it's sort of manufacturing focused in a lot of ways, but that'll be interesting to see what goes on there this year.
We'll be able to compare notes on them next Friday, Michael, and see how we each did.
Excellent. Okay, well, until then, we'll be talking.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Talk to you next week.
All right.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.